I just got off this podcast. I just did one with my sister, and it was this woman who just adopted 7 children. Their parents died in a car accident, and she took all 7 siblings in. Amazing. Crazy.
God.
Yeah, just on another level, sainthood
stuff. So how was she related to, I mean, right now people are checking out of our podcast and going to that one.
Well, but we don't know when these are airing, so, you know,
no,
don't
know.
Switch
so
over.
How did she know the people who passed away? Or was this just in the news?
She didn't. It was in the news. Yes, she heard it in the news and then started the process and then got all 7 children. And
wow.
This is right after she raised 5 of her own. They left the house and immediately, you know, a new 7.
That's phenomenal.
She's
not.
I mean,
can you confirm or deny that she lives in a shoe?
Yes, I can't.
Was an old lady who lived in a shoe.
I can confirm this.
Had so many kids.
It didn't come from me.
Andrew Dice Clay had so many kids.
Oh,
her
yeah.
uterus,
her
fell,
uterus
out.
Fell out. By the way, Dice back then, man, I was a young kid too, and I loved him. I was all about Dice.
Yeah. I was too. I remember when that album came out. That, I feel like, came out around the same time the Sam Kinison comedy album came out.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on bus trips and school,
yeah.
And everybody had their Walkman with the cassette tape in it, and everybody's giggling, and teachers didn't know what we were listening to. And I mean, that was about as rebellious as I got back in roaring 80s.
Oh, my God. Oh, for sure. And then, you know what I tried to play my kids the other day? On the car ride is the Jerky Boys. Remember the Jerky Boys?
Yeah. No, you've talked about that on this show. I think that's bad parenting.
Right.
They're
well,
little.
You know why?
I was in high school.
It's not bad parenting because after listening to it, you know, especially for my kids, it just didn't hold up. They checked out immediately, you know?
They're like, I've heard this kind of crap. This
well, it wasn't as far as prank phone calls go. For me, it was amazing, you know. Shooting pumpkin balls out of my ass.
Yeah.
I mean, all that.
And you're roaring with laughter. And
yeah,
because,
and they're like, they're on their, you know, on their phones in the back. Like, what the hell is this? I'm like, all right.
Quiet. So, I've got right now, I mean, this is daddy issues. And right
who
now, my
that
wife,
kid?
My
Where
that's Blake.
Blake just pulled a knife out, it looked like.
It's a letter opener. And I've never really understood letter openers, but he just pulled one out. It doesn't have any sharp edges, but it does have a point, which could seriously injure him. But my wife, Michelle, is out of town, and so I've got the boys, and I have help, but they just want to stay next to me. So they're upset that mom is gone. And I think they're clinging on to the next closest parent. And
look
so
at
here
Blake.
I.
Yeah, he doesn't look happy. Blake
is. Boy's been crying because I've been trying to pull away from him for the last half an hour to get on this podcast. And every time I take a step into my office, waterworks, screaming. And I'm going one room away.
I wish our listeners could see right now. It's just too cute. It's Joe and his boy Blake sitting next to each other. Like, he's got this look on his face of like, I'm here, but what's next? What's going on? And let me take this letter opener.
And I'm wearing headphones, so he can't. he may take this out and put it in his brother's neck, which is an issue. But I wanted to talk before Rob gets on about what we did last week, which was one of the most fun days of my life and one of the most frustrating and embarrassing days of my life.
And just odd.
The whole
just
thing
odd.
Was weird.
The whole thing.
You and I haven't talked about it a ton, but we were on Family Feud, Celebrity Family Feud, which is a different set than the typical Family Feud. And we can't talk about what happened because it's going to air sometime in the summer. We do not have an air date. So when we get that, we will certainly pass that along. But the whole thing started. It's like, oh, wait, we're starting. And we start. I couldn't really hear anybody. Maybe that's because I'm old. And then the whole game unfolded. And the way it ended is going to be I think it'll be a viral epic. Moment.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get just trashed.
Oh.
And we can't go into why.
We can't get into the details, but you're not going to get trashed. There's no way. But it's funny because it started as crazy as it ended. The first category, you and I get up, it's you and we do our little button things. Boom, I hit it first. I get the number one answer. But then it just goes way downhill from right there.
it just devolved. And we can't say why. In fact, that portion of it will never be seen by the viewing public because we can reveal that. There is you won the control of the board.
Right.
And then your side went through, you know, I guess the next three people all got X's and there were not enough points to really qualify. So we friggin' started the whole thing over again.
We had to start the whole game over. But the category was weird, man. It was a weird one. You know, even Steve Harvey was sort of like, when are we going to get this category out of the mix here?
Because the question almost was terrible.
Yeah, it almost felt like
they've tried it before.
And they're like, hey, maybe the Hudson Buck clans can figure this
out. I think we would have stolen that one. I think. But we didn't even get a chance to because there weren't enough points.
Yeah.
So I can't wait till this episode airs because there's going to be so much to talk about and so many laughs. And it was
great. Without even talking about the show was really great. And again, Joe is right. This could be a viral moment. What happens at the end? It's really amazing. But just the everyone coming together, the families coming together, my friends who you really hadn't met,
who I love,
my best and oldest friends.
Yeah, they're great.
You know, and your daughters and your sister and Michelle and Aaron. And it was just a fun, really fun time.
But I asked you a question yesterday, and now you've had 24 hours almost to the minute to think about the answer to this. And that is, let's say you weren't playing my family, and you were going to do the same bandit thing by bringing three of your friends to join your wife on stage. Am I close enough now that I would have made the cut as one of your three quote-unquote best friends? And if so, and if the answer is no, then the answer is no. But if the answer is yes, then whose spot would I have taken?
Well, this is a hard question because, first of all, you live in St. Louis, but let's just assume that
I would have come.
Right? No way. Flano, they were out here. I would say that you're there, but I'm not sure who I would give the spot, who I would take out of the mix, I guess. You know, I've got John, Jesse, Brian, Alex, and Mark, okay? That's five. I'd have to even kick one of them out. I don't know, man. I got to be honest and say that you probably wouldn't be me and one of the four. It wouldn't be nice to my other friends, I guess. It's a hard one to answer. You know,
I get it. I guess it just says more about the state of affairs from my side of the fence because I can honestly tell you that, if you were willing, and let's say the show was shooting in St. Louis, would I fly you in? Yes. Would you be one of my three to four friends that would join me on stage? I think my answer is yes. That's my answer.
Maybe me, Harry, Mike McDaniel.
Yeah, my friend Ryan Manzik.
Ryan Manzik. And Aaron Rodgers.
And Aaron Rodgers, but he's busy with Jeopardy. So he would switch from Jeopardy host, get, you know, dipped by Family Feud on his way to off-season training program with the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm.
But I am excited. But on that subject, I am glad that you got to hang with my friends a little bit. You know, so you and we are included on our text thread now. You know, it's all coming.
They're
around.
They're not at all what I thought they would be. They are very buttoned up. It was gonna be Oliver, Aaron, and three guys who rolled out of the van with Spicoli. That's what I thought.
No, man,
Mr. Hand. Yeah, that's what I thought. And these guys were. far more interesting, quite frankly, than you. So I'm trying now to go through you to get onto a text chain so I can have separate relationships with each and every one of them.
I love it too, and they love you. But I will say you were a little quiet. You know, and I don't know if you're tired or
I was exhausted.
You were okay because I was sitting exhausted. Next to you at dinner and. I was thinking, man, Joe's a little quiet, and I honestly didn't want to feel like I was leaving you out in any way because my friends and I have such a back and forth, and I was like, oh, is Joe feeling like I'm leaving him out?
Oh my God, no, not at
I
all.
I felt that a little bit,
not in the least. But yeah, I don't know. I was tired. It was I didn't get a lot of sleep the night before, and then it was stressful that day, and it became a full day because my daughters and my wife and my sister turned it into like, hey, we're going to do makeup 3 hours before we go there. And then we're going to drink champagne and we're going to have all this stuff. And by the time we got there, I was like, ugh, I just exhaled. And then, like we said, I mean, the whole, and we can talk about this more then, but the whole show kind of started in odd fashion. And it was just a little ambiguous what we were doing. Like I felt naked out there.
You got in your head a little bit. But, you know, it was fun for me to hang out with Natalie and Trudy, too, because, of course, I've known them for a long time, but I've not really got to hang with them. And you got some cool-ass girls. And then Natalie stayed with her man after everyone left, and we drank more wine and had a great time. She reminds me of you. She's tough. She's brash. She's no bullshit.
Yeah. She's unafraid. 24, acts like she's 44, and can try to own the room even though she's in it with people who are 20 years older than her. So
yeah, totally. Oh, I got great insights into you as a dad and, you know, how she needs to trying to please you and doesn't want to upset you or make, you know, you mean a lot to her. I mean,
she hung me out to dry.
Is everything for her.
I know. She's such a great kid. And Trudy is so independent and on her own. And
she
in
is.
A good way.
She's like a quiet kind of badass, you know?
Yeah. It's like you got to work to get her approval. You have to work to get her. She's not an easy laugh, which I like most of the time. Sometimes I just want her to lighten up. She's a lot like me. Natalie is a lot like my mom in some weird way. But Trudy's most like me, I think, but Natalie worrying about my approval. Like, my God, you got that on June 7th, 1996, when you were born. You have my approval. There's nothing you could do, including murder, that would make me bail. And we've talked about that on this podcast a million times, and she knows that, but I think it's the day-to-day. She's very aware of everybody in the room, and I think mainly, you know, I am of her, I am of her sister, and they are of me, and I think we just worry too much. We talked about it the next day. I talked about you with her, like, you know, I wish I could be more like Oliver and just kind of let people be, and I can't. I'm trying to manage everybody's feelings all the time, and that really, it's an unwinnable situation, and you just kind of let people be. You may be dealing with your own stuff. That's one thing, but I'm dealing with everybody's crap, especially when my second wife is with my kids from my first marriage and my sister. There's a lot going on in my head that probably isn't even there anymore, but it still gets in there.
No, well, that's like, you know, the part of Natalie that I see that is of you is that sort of that, I mean, that worry or that holding on too tight. And that's what I was saying to her.
God.
You know, we were both drinking, right? And she was getting loud. I'm like, Nat, I was like, you just got to let it fucking go. You're giving this too much energy. You know, you're doing yourself a disservice. Let it go. You're creating this stress.
It's the same stuff you say to me. Yeah, I know.
So it was interesting.
Look who's in the Zoom call. You don't even know because you're on your phone. I'm on my desktop, so I see the beautiful face of Rob Lowe, who has checked into our podcast. And I guess appropriately right in front of one of the coolest pictures I think I've ever seen of Rob and his two boys shirtless. That's something I would never do. with their arms crossed, looking like badasses. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. That's an Annie Leibovitz portrait from a Vanity Fair thing that I did years ago. And I just love that picture of my guys at that age. So,
they're now mid-20s. How old are they then? Like teenage, like 15, 17, something like that?
Yeah, they're both in high school in that photo. My oldest now is already, you know, graduated law school, passed the bar. And my youngest is in his third year on writing staffs. He's actually on 911 Lone Star, wrote our big episode this year. Our biggest episode was a crossover. He wrote it. So they're out in the world doing their thing.
So you got one in the business and then one who's saying, I don't want any part of it.
That's right. And by the way, that's exactly what he would say. If you asked him, he'd be like, I don't want any part.
Really? Why do you think that's just inherent, just natural nature? Or was there a part of him just watching it all happen around him and is like, fuck this? Because I was I had that, you know?
Did you? It's both. He's naturally a man of few words. Hates auditioning. And by that, I don't mean literally auditioning. He hates just that notion of having to like charm somebody. Like he just wants to be himself. And then my other son is like, you know, a little bit more like me, where he's like happy to come into the room and like be like, hello, I'm here and love me.
What is it? The three of us on this call are very much that way. You know, we all do it in different ways too, but I'm always trying to please everybody. Oliver, good God. I mean, he's kind of the snarky class clown in the back of the room. Even when he's with his family, which is Goldie and Kate and Kurt, Oliver is kind of the cool kid in the corner, but everybody walks away loving him. And for you, Rob, I've seen you in rooms, seen you at upfronts. I've seen you at playoff baseball games. I've seen you at NFL games. People just naturally gravitate toward you, and I think the three of us probably at the end of the day really are pleasers, which can kind of get you in trouble sometimes.
I think it is. I love people. I do. I'm gregarious in that way, and like making people happy, and like meeting people. I'm curious about them and their lives, and so it makes it easy. I feel badly for people who end up in the limelight and then have a hard time with it. And like, they really hate it. They just aren't comfortable in their own skin. They don't want people bothering them. They don't want to talk to people. And it's not that they're dicks, although a lot of them are. It's just that it doesn't come naturally to them. And that would be torture.
And you had that, seemingly, you know, from an outsider's perspective, your whole life. I mean, you got into this young. You've been in rooms and been around older actors, executives, whatever. You've had to charm people, I would imagine, as you look back, since you can remember.
Yeah, I've been singing for my supper for a long time, but it's not
work though. That's just naturally. It seems to be naturally who you are. I mean, there's a joy in that.
I was putting on, you know, shows in my grandparents' garage. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was 6 and 7, 8. You know, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to communicate through storytelling, really. And you know, if you're going to be a storyteller, you're going to want people around to hear the stories.
Mm-hmm. And your relationship with your dad, a good one?
He was just out here. I just posted on my Instagram just this week, he and I working out in the gym. He's 81. He looks like a cross between James Caan and Paul Newman.
Oh God! That's cool.
And my earliest memories of my dad when we moved out to California were he would literally stop traffic in Beverly Hills when he walked down the street. He is a good looking mofo, and you know, he's still practicing law, still working every day at 81 in Ohio, and I'm lucky to still have him around.
Isn't it amazing, Rob, when you get out into the world and you grow up and you realize, I mean, you only know your situation. I only knew mine. Oliver knew his. Oliver's is very different than mine. And I had a dad that was in the business I'm in now. Yep, and I saw how he was to people. Same kind of thing. He stopped traffic for different reasons, at least locally, because it was like, oh my God, there's Jack Buck. But But then you realize as you get older, how few people had this relationship with a father that they could look up to and idolize. And in your case, you know, at 81, somebody who's still practicing law can work out with. And I mean, what a gift. As you, in, but you don't know that until you get older and you start comparing notes with friends and you're like, Jesus, I, man, did I, was I blessed? And it seems trite and cliche, but that is such the case for somebody like you.
It's invaluable. And as you alluded to, you start to look at that relationship through the prism of the relationship you have with your own kids. Mm-hmm. And that's when things get really crazy. Like, okay, so how about this? My oldest son, Matthew, is the same age my dad was when he had me.
Crazy.
That's insane. And I look at Matthew, who I love. He's so well adjusted, and he's so great. He's this is not in any way a knock of my beloved oldest son Matthew, but that kid shouldn't have a kid. What the hell? It's mental.
But I'm sure you know he could figure it out, you know, if that came to pass. I mean, you've put enough into him, and that's why I was so glad that you said you would come on this, because I see you from afar, and I see you through social media. I've seen you in a room with your boys. There is a real friendship there that I don't see a lot of the time. It's still, for a lot of people, it remains father-son, father-daughter. I see you as three guys hanging out, and that is awesome.
And to add to that, though, before you answer it, like, how do you balance that? Because do you think that there is a line that you have to walk, especially when they're younger, between dad and being a friend?
100%. And thanks, by the way, Joe, for that observation, because that is what it is, and that's what it feels like. But, and it's the biggest but in the world, when they're in their formative years, that you don't want to be their friend then. I mean, you want to be. Every fiber in your being wants to be, but that's not doing them any good. They've got friends. You need to be that impenetrable wall that is setting the boundaries for them to be their best selves. Because, you know, kids don't, they think they want their freedoms, and maybe they do want it, but what they need are the boundaries. Whether it's,
I preach that all the time. It's just amazing to hear you say that. Sorry to interrupt, but unconsciously, they want that shit. They crave the boundaries. They crave discipline without them even knowing it, I believe. And that creates respect.
I mean, do you know how terrifying it is for a kid to be rolling around their room at 6 years old and it's midnight and nobody has said to them, get in bed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, the message is nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a whole set of parents or, you know, a mindset was like, oh, we give him his freedom. He'll go to bed when his body is tired. All that bullshit. It's bullshit. It's gnarly. It's really bad. So my boys would tell you that our house was both the fun house to hang out at and the strictest. Of all of their friends.
So that means you walk that line really, really well, because if you weren't also the friend while you were being strict, they're not going to drag their friends over there to hang out. So you got that validation that, and you need those little, you know, I've got two little boys who are three, but I've got 24 and 21-year-old daughters, and you need those little moments and those benchmarks to go, okay, I got to this destination in a pretty good spot because my kids still want to be around me and I'm not a pushover. You know, it's so many, to me, it gets back to almost being lazy. If I'm in an airport and you see these kids that are running between passengers and there are people are hurrying to gates and they're tripping over kids. And it's like, oh, I'm just going to give my kid a space. Don't look at my kid that way. I'm just going to, no, get your fucking kid over there and tell him to sit down and be quiet.
My kids would, I remember, you know, we used to have like vases of like M&Ms in the house or whatever. They were sort of decorative, but if you wanted one, you obviously could have, hang on, look, So that kind of stuff would be around the house. And I remember people coming over when we had toddlers and going, how do you, don't they eat it? Doesn't that get all over the couch? Like, no, because that's mommy and daddy's things. Mm-hmm. You don't get to run amok on mommy and daddy's things. You have your things. And, you know, it really all pays off, but you do get exhausted. And I think the hardest part about being a parent for me was when they're old enough to be smart as hell, charming as hell, and lie like hell. Mm-hmm. And you are just like, oh my God. I just want to let go and say yes to stuff that they've been grinding you on. Like the high school years for me were really, really tough. Really tough.
Yeah, talk about that for a second, because I'm just thinking of myself in my high school years. I got expelled from Crossroads. I ended up working.
Time out.
Yeah.
What must you have done to get expelled from Crossroads?
That I cheated on a test. I didn't even do anything that bad. They called us in with my mother and myself into the principal's office and expelled me on the spot. And my mother was on the spot, and my mom was not a happy camper. Not with me, but with how they handled the whole situation. Anyway, I mean, I wrote a letter to get back in my senior year in high school, and I ended up graduating with my class. But I did get expelled. I worked at an agency. I was on my own homeschooling, doing crazy, crazy things with, you know, with older assistants, you know, at CAA. I mean, I was amazing. In this whole world that my parents knew nothing about. I had east of Doheny at night was my like stomping ground at 16. And then I lived a whole separate life, you know, at home. I wonder if they knew what the hell I was doing. If they
no,
did,
they didn't.
I don't think they did.
I'm finding stuff out right now. To this day, I'm finding stuff out that my kids did that I had no idea. And we were as hands-on, wide awake, under no illusions, as you could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And we still didn't know.
Crazy.
I'll never forget. My first wife and I were separated, and I was the one that moved out. And I come back. My daughter is getting ready for a dance. She's a junior in high school, senior in high school. And I walk in the kitchen unannounced. My daughter didn't know I was going to be there. And my daughter is pouring out drinks to her friends and looked up, and it was like she saw God walk through the door, and it was like, wait, what? I didn't. And so I'm saying that because I don't think my eyes were that wide open. I felt like she did the same stuff I did. I tried to be as straight and narrow as I could be when I was in high school. I know that surprises Oliver. And as I walk in there, I'm like, holy shit. All of a sudden she's the bartender, like pouring out these drinks to these kids. And I was like, I better wake the hell up because stuff's going on here that I don't know. So, I mean, I think they're always doing a little more than you are aware that they're doing. And you just have to hope and pray that you've put enough of an anchor or ballast in there that they don't get in trouble or they're not getting in harm's way, you know, when they're doing this stuff.
I tell people, if you have the smallest inkling, the smallest, most unsubstantiated inkling that your kid might, in the most unlikely scenario, be doing something, they are doing it, and they're doing it a lot more than you can imagine.
Right. Right.
Right. But when your kids, we talk about discipline, but they start to grow up, they go through puberty, they want to experience things, you know that they're going to go behind your back. At what point, or do you ever loosen the reins a little bit and let them have these experiences and learn for themselves? You know, did you have that with your kids?
Well, I did. And honestly, I don't mean to be overly serious about it, but I really do think that for young men, I don't know, maybe I had boys, so I don't really know. And I know that men are different than girls, but for young men from, I would say, 15 to 20, early 20s, literally job one is just keep them alive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kidding. Yeah. And
it's true. I agree.
And, you know, they're going to be experimenting with drugs. They're going to be experimenting with alcohol. They've got to figure out what their relationship is with that stuff. It's going to happen. It better happen. Mm-hmm. They better figure it out. And, you know, like I've been sober 31 years next month. And, you know, and I'm not speaking out of school. He's very public about it. But I looked at my young son, John Owen, and I was like, oh. We're saving a seat for this one. And so I knew before he knew, way before. And, you know, it was all of that thing about trying to get him help and do all these things. And all you can do is sort of try to keep them alive and try to keep them from making any mistake that is irreparable.
Do you think that's hereditary? Do you buy into that?
I do. And there's also a theory that it skips generations. I mean, there's all kinds of things, but I think that we will one day find the gene or whatever the hell it is, the strand that shows you, you know, it's like no different than a propensity to be allergic to pollen. You'll be allergic to drugs and alcohol will trigger something in your brain that it doesn't in a whole other segment of the population, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you like conversations with legendary actors, like today's episode with Rob Lowe, take a dive into the Daddy Issues archives and listen to our conversations with Hank Azaria, where we discuss everything from Major League Sports to Hank's times as a TV sportscaster on Brockmire to fatherhood, raising tweens, and so much more.
One of the things that scared me about being a dad was I don't particularly like children, Joe and Oliver. I don't know you guys. I'm not kid guy. Like, oh, wonderful. Kids will be there. Delightful. I don't like that. That annoys me, my old cranky.
Still?
My
wife still does?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love my son. There's like... I said this in the doc, I feel about kids the way I feel about people. Like most of them are annoying. And every once in a while I run into someone I think is cool and I like, you know. And children are no different. And my son's, you know, he has a couple of friends. I think that kid's cool. But most of them are like, oh God, I literally can't wait till this kid's out of my house.
Totally. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more from today's guest, Rob Lowe.
Did your boys have a tough time, or were they just accepting of you and your status in Hollywood as a star, as someone people know, and having to deal with that on a day-to-day basis? Because it was different for my sister and I. She handled it much differently than I did.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what it would be like for you guys, because you've got the double whammy of Kurt and Goldie, who, by the way, I adore both so much. And
they're the best.
And really I have such people. I have such great stories about both of them from the day.
love it.
I made the decision early to move my kids out, way out of Los Angeles. So we moved up to Santa Barbara. When we moved up here, nobody was here. It was just old people. you know, it was way before Oprah and Prince Harry. And so
they're bringing friends home. They're bringing friends home. They're like 74 years old. Yeah. Hey, meet Cap. He grew up in Chicago. He's been out here for the last 40 years, hanging out with us tonight.
Yeah, I remember they would get invited to, we would take them into LA and they'd come back and go, Dad, we went to so-and-so's house in Malibu and they had a screening room and they showed a movie and Jim Carrey came to it. Like they might have as well have been raised in Nebraska.
Yeah.
And so they, but they also knew, obviously, that I, you know, they were used to people stopping me on the street. So they had this weird thing of growing up way outside of show business. But because I, you know, have been doing it for so long, they were also really used to people stopping me. And it's so funny. They're very codependent about that. It's really fun because like they're very uptight if I don't. And by the way, I always sign an autograph. But if I don't see somebody or what, because I'm deaf in one ear too, by the way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I won't hear people when they say hello. And they're like, oh, he's deaf in one ear. He didn't see you. And they're like, Jesus Christ. They're like, they very like want to make sure I give every picture, take everything. They like work for the Chamber of Commerce for my fans.
That's great, though. It's
cute. I understand think that's that. Cute. Yeah, they want people to love their dad, and I you know, that all, it's all intertwined. I mean, if you can hang with them like you do now, and that makes sense that they would want to make sure that you leave a great impression on whoever comes in contact with Rob Lowe, that that they walked away happy, and if they have to help facilitate that, then they will.
That's but you cool. also yeah. made a conscious decision, right, to get them out of LA.
I did. Yeah. Oh, and I'll tell you how it happened. You'll appreciate this. Because you grew up, and this is in no way a judgment, you grew up in exactly the kind of scenario that I knew would happen to my boys.
Right.
If I stayed there. And I can remember what happened. My oldest son, Matthew, was about, we had to think about preschools, which I don't even consider schools. Mm-hmm. I guess they are. But it's like, let's get real. It's Play-Doh. Mm-hmm. It's crayons. It's not school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So... and I remember them going, well, your son is only 6 months old, but you should be on the list for preschools already. And I was like, well, what? He's 6 months old. He's in a... So, and they go, and you know who you should talk to get into the best preschools is Mike Ovitz. Mike Ovitz then being the head of CAA, where, by the way, you ended up working.
I did.
And I was like, I saw my whole... future laid out for me perfectly. It's like Mike Ovitz as the gatekeeper to the Play-Doh set at the schools. And then it was like, and then I know I'll end up being the little league coach, which I was, loved it. And I have to worry about whether I'm going to put Bob Iger's kid in at second base or not. Or if I want to pull, you know, I'm just making it up. David Geffen's fucking kid out of shortstop. And I like, this is going to be a living hell for me. Mm-hmm. And we fled. We fled.
Good for you. I mean, we had a similar situation in that Mom met Kurt. Kurt had a place in Colorado. We went to Colorado, fell in love with it, and actually moved up there to get out of LA when we were young as well. And so we went to elementary school for a couple of years in Colorado. And it changed my entire life. The trajectory of my life, it definitely shifted. I got into nature. I understood independence, you know, figuring shit out for myself, not being afraid. You know, a lot of these big life themes just came flooding into my being from being in the woods. I did the same thing with my kids. I took them out in between gigs. We moved to Colorado for 2 years. I put them in public school, and it was the most amazing 2 years that we've ever had. I had to come back for work, so it was tough, but I'm trying to just give them a piece of reality, you know.
But isn't life that the hard thing for both of you guys? If you feel like you're not in the hornet's nest of activity in LA and Hollywood and whatever, for you, Rob, going to Santa Barbara, that's far enough away where it's not that easy to go, oh yeah, I'll be down there and we'll agree to a shooting schedule, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's not so convenient.
Yep, for sure.
So you gotta put yourself second there, I think.
100%. The reason I ended up doing television in the first place, it's hard to imagine now because television is where everything, you know, worthwhile really is. But there was a time when television was not as esteemed as it was. And, you know, and I ended up doing The West Wing, A, because I thought it was great, but it enabled me to be home at night. Because prior to that, you know, I might be gone for, you know, 8 weeks on a location somewhere around the world. And, you know, I got to figure, am I going to schlep my kids or not? Or, you know, mm-hmm. so the TV thing really was a lot of it was about, and by the way, that's where I've been really almost ever since, was being, was able to have a life with my wife and kids too.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm going through that now. It's like, I don't want to go anywhere. I want a sitcom on a stage where I work minimal hours, have a great little time doing that, and just am able to be with my family here. That's the goal at this point.
That's the dream.
It's 100%. It's shifted. You know, it's shifted because, you know, you get this creative desire. Oh, I want to do something worthy and something that comes from my soul. And, you know, which it's still there. But now I'm 44 and I just want to settle in to my family life, really, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I get it.
What about growing up, you know, with your family, with your dad, you know, them and the rope that they gave you, were they disciplined? Did they understand who you were and what you were going to be and some of the hardships that you might be facing and how they dealt with that?
So my mom and dad divorced when I was 4. So I had my biological father, my father, who was in the 81-year-old video, still working out. We had, from the time, I have memories of living with him, but they're very foggy. And so my experience with him is the weekend, the quintessential weekend dad. And then the, you know, we're going to go on spring break. We're going to get together. And then in the summers, I would go back to Dayton, Ohio and spend a month there. So it's a really interesting thing when you have that with your dad, because it's not the consistent day in and day out. And I think it makes for a very different relationship. And you know, but to your question, what is kind of amazing about both of my parents was that when I said I wanted to be an actor, and then as I got older and had to make concessions or choices about that, they were so supportive of it. Just down to the fact that I see you're wearing your SC hat, Joe. I was supposed to go to USC and instead went and did The Outsiders. Now, if you want to be an actor and you can work with Francis Ford Coppola, that's a no-brainer. But now as a parent of myself,
yeah,
I'm like, wait a minute, hang on. Whoa, 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 whoa. So you're not going to go to college. We worked all the time to get in. And you're going to go and like do this thing with no guarantees and what? So, and my parents never put any of the second thoughts at all on me. And I don't know if I would be capable of doing that with my own kids.
Mm. Right. I know. Just to say, hold on, wait a minute, you know? Well, my mom did that with Kate, you know, because she was just acting out of the womb. She wanted to be on television and be in movies from the get-go. But mom was like, look, you can do your plays. Do your school plays. When you're 18 years old, you can make some of your own decisions here. But I'm not going to allow you to sort of get into that world quite yet. So she put restrictions on her for sure.
That's when it came to that. I knew that as the Bruce Paltrow rule. Because I can remember when Gwyneth won her Academy Award and my kids were young. And I was like, I know I'm going to cross this bridge at some point. I might as well ask the expert because he raised a great young woman. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, yeah, I never let Gwyneth do anything really until she was 18. Mm-hmm. So that's when people ask about kids and acting. I think when in doubt, that's a perfect rule.
Like, but as you look back, think about how fast, I mean, when you're going through it, I'm sure it doesn't feel like this, but as you look back as, you know, a guy in his 50s with two older kids, you look back at the beginning of your career, The Outsiders, Class, Hotel New Hampshire, Oxford Blues, St. Elmo's Fire, About Last Night. That's all within a 3-4 year period. I mean, that's unbelievable. And so obviously your parents knew to put money on the right horse because you didn't go to USC and you're rattling off movies that like shaped my little St. Louis being back in the day. And, you know, seeing these movies, I was talking about it with a friend today. There's so many of these kind of coming of age movies that you were in that I hope that stuff is still being produced because I learned a lot about life, oddly enough, from your movies and kind of the dynamic between, you know, a guy and a girl. And in your case, a lot of times, a guy and an older woman, which happened quite a bit in movies that you were in. But that was important to me. And I hope that's, I assume that stuff is still being made, but I guarantee you it's not at the level that you were making it. I mean, well, you had a lot to do with who I am as a kid, who I was as a kid.
Oh, thank you, man. I love hearing that. And, you know, but that time was really different, right? There was, you know, there were three networks on television. Mm-hmm. That's it. Movies were still movies. And, you know, it was the beginning of the celebration of youth in the world. You know, like now everything is geared towards a 15-year-old boy. Then it was very specific group of movies only guaranteed to 15-year-old boys, and I happened to be in them. So we had a sort of free shot on goal because there was no one else doing it. There was no CW, you know, there was none of that stuff. There wasn't a glut, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Of coming of age stuff that speaks to young people today. That's all that there is, really. There's nothing that speaks to people our age now. Mm-hmm. In the old days, it was reversed.
But am I the get off my lawn guy, or do you look back at that body of work and go, God, you know, that was some really good stuff. Like it holds up. If I come across St. Elmo's Fire now, I'm not moving my clicker from St. Elmo's Fire or About Last Night. I mean, I would imagine About Last Night is on people of my, I'm 50, about to be 52, people on my age, that's on their top 10 list. It doesn't matter what you do in life. You could be a teamster.
Call it a clicker. You still call it a clicker too.
Exactly. So a clicker. You know,
you're showing your age.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So, I mean, I just think that stuff, and maybe just because it's in my wheelhouse that I think back on it, but do you look back, do you come across that stuff ever? And you look back on your young self doing these movies going, yeah, it's really, it's pretty damn good.
I mean,
is it hard?
Look, some of it's painful because I was still really learning my way around acting, you know, and, you know, you just grow so much. You grow as a person, you're going to grow as an actor. So I'm a young kid, so I'm a young actor, which means I don't know a whole lot about much, but particularly About Last Night, I think, and St. Elmo's, they just occupy a place in people's, in the zeitgeist of that time. And I feel like really fortunate and proud that I was able to be in those. I mean, ironically, my favorite movies of that time are like Breakfast Club, which I auditioned for, by the way, and didn't get. It's the only John Hughes had
role?
No time for me.
Did
John
you get
Hughes
close?
Had no time for me.
Yeah. How are you not in a John Hughes movie? I don't understand.
I think that if you ask most people, they would think that I would be have been in a John Hughes movie. He had no time for me. Zero. I he was not selling whatever or buying whatever I was selling. Don't know why. I have my theories on it. Well, I know what my theories were. I was already famous.
Okay.
And John only used people that he could make famous. Yeah. You know, Coppola was that to me. So I think that's what it was. But regardless, about The Breakfast Club is a fucking amazing movie.
It really is. I just watched it recently. And by the way, I just watched Outsiders because my kid is in seventh grade. He's reading the book, read the book. And I'm like, all right, let's watch the movie.
I love that. The people – every year I there's a whole crop of seventh graders that discover The Outsiders and therefore discover me, which is an actor. Like you want to stay relevant and have young people into your stuff. And I just have this annuity with the Outsiders that every year, every seventh grader is forced to spend time with my 19-year-old performance. Well, performance of me when I was 19, it's older than that now.
Hey, how much does sports, you know, play into the relationship with your boys? I mean, is sports an important component?
Joe can tell you, that what would massive baseball fans, my boys and I are, we flew to Houston for the Dodgers World Series. I think that might've been the last time you and I hung out a little bit, Joe. And, we went to opening day, the ring ceremony, and, you know, it's that cliche about baseball, sports in general, but baseball in particular, of it is a generational thing, passed down father to son. All those cliches are true. I can only imagine what it's like for you, Joe, to be in your father's footsteps and to be in the booth. And it's always, your dad's always going to be a part of that, always, no matter what. Mm-hmm. He's going to be around. And when I go to a baseball game, it's with me and with my kids. And I think about my dad watching the Reds and back in Cincinnati and, you know, or the Lakers, you know, that was another big thing for me. My other son is a bigger Laker fan. We love our sports, big sports family.
Do you find yourself still parenting your kids, even though they are a little bit older? And do you think that will ever go away? And does your 81-year-old dad still parent you?
Here's what's interesting. And at 18, I believe our kids are old enough to go out and fight in a war. I think it's 18.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So you got to transition. You have to give them that respect of their adults. And it's hard. It's really hard. I'm going to speak for myself. It's really hard for my wife. Like the only fights my wife and I have today is that it is almost impossible for her to see these men as men. And, you know, that's an ongoing thing that we talk about, because I now have come to a place, and I think it's really necessary, where I will let them fail.
Boy, that's hard to do.
Even when you know that they're going to, meaning, okay, I know the outcome, but I'm going to let you have this one and feel it yourself.
Well, here's a perfect one. I'm going to digress into something I'm sure we'll run with in a minute. So we did Celebrity Family Feud this week.
You were on right after us.
You're on right after us.
Did you know
I was
that?
On right after. I've only found out afterwards.
I know. I'm like, well, where's Rob? Well, the cool thing was, and I'm stopping your story, but this leads to another thing. You've been married forever.
Yeah.
You're still romancing your wife. Your wife is a huge Family Feud fan, as is my wife, as huge. And so you tricked her into thinking that you guys were going for an interview, and you walk in. We were around long enough to see you guys walk on stage and to see her face kind of like, oh my God, it was just so cool. And for somebody who's been, two people who've been around Hollywood and that kind of stuff their whole lives, to see two people get into Family Feud like that was so cool. But you're still, you know, they moved everything. They were in on the surprise for your wife. I just thought that was so cool.
They were, thank you. My wife is hard to surprise and impossible, in fact, and I pulled it off. She had no idea until she was standing on the set of Family Feud. And which, you just to say that she's a fan of that show is an understatement. I mean, every night, you'd think the last thing I would hear would be, "Good night, honey," from my wife. It's actually Steve Harvey's voice yelling, "Survey says!" That's what I get. But so my thing about letting my kids fail is, I told John Owen, I told both of them, I said, "Listen, they don't know nothing about Family Feud." I was like, "Watch some stuff on YouTube, get acquainted with the show so you know the rules." Yeah. Matthew, being the diligent lawyer, did. John Owen, being, you know, whatever, did not. I knew he didn't. I was like, I said, "Dude, don't fuck us." Get, like, of course he didn't. He shows up to Family Feud having never seen it, no idea what it is, and thinks that's fine. And so inevitably there's that moment where it's like you're up person to person and you got to hit the buzzer. The people we were playing with hit the buzzer, flamed out. John Owen didn't know he would have a chance to answer a second question. So he didn't even think of anything. And I'm like, this is what I'm saying. It's like, I'm telling you, I have one kid that if I say it's raining, if you go outside, you're going to get wet. He doesn't believe it until he goes outside and gets wet. That's who my youngest son is. And when he was younger, I had to force my knowledge and boundaries on that. But he's a man now. Mm-hmm. And now I let him walk out and get wet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wait till Cheryl sees our episode, because she's not going to think much of me. Our episode ended in the biggest flame out of all time. Yeah, and we can't talk about it. We can't talk about it because it hasn't aired, and they kind of swear you to secrecy, although they really don't. But for the purposes of not revealing how it ends, it's just not pretty.
We started out, talk about not pretty. It was literally, you ever watch it? Okay. You remember game seven, Dodgers against Houston Astros?
Sure.
Where there was literally, it was a humiliating, mortifying, nowhere to hide, all eyes on you, want to dig a hole. Mm-hmm. That's where we were. We were down.
You were Yu Darvish. You were Yu Darvish.
I was Yu Darvish. Except nobody was giving the other side the signs.
Right. No, I knew that was coming. Yeah.
There was no trash cans.
No trash can.
No trash can. There should have been. But we managed to come back, and I will only say that the whole thing came down to one do or die question for me.
Wow.
So did ours, kind of.
And I had to get 50 points on one question, or we were done. I'm not going to say what happened.
Wow.
It was really fun. The game show gods really smiled that day because
they took a shit on me. So they literally opened up, and yeah, I needed the raincoat your son should be wearing to go walk outside and get shit on, because it was not. But we'll just leave that for another day.
If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, which you should be, because if you're not, then you have problems.
You know what? Don't start that over. Don't take the word "if" out of that.
Okay. No. So hey, listen, you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues.
Yeah.
Right? You're enjoying it. Don't keep it to yourself. Share the love. Tell a friend about Daddy Issues. Go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If I sound angry, I'm not. I'm just gently pushing you.
Stay tuned. You don't want to miss the rest of our conversation with Rob Lowe coming up right after this short break. Are you having more fun now in the business than you ever have doing the 911 show and kind of picking and choosing and I'm sure producing and piecing things together than you did when, you know, you were rolling back in the 80s?
I did. I mean, I think part of it is where my career is at and sort of also my worldview is where it's at. And I just am, I'm knocking on wood right now because I have a job I love. I work with collaborators I love. I'm making a show that it's hard, by the way, it's hard to have a hit. And this show is a fucking monster beast hit. And
great.
And I love that. That, I mean, that's not nothing, because I've had, you know, other shows I love that just don't find an audience. So that's really fun.
Didn't you turn down Grey's Anatomy? Is that real?
That is real. And my wife never lets me forget it. She'll never. Cheryl keeps talking about all the timeshare planes we would have.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what's really weird about that is if I had to go and do it again, I probably with the same information that I had at the time, I would have made the same choice. Because you just don't know. But then you know, the other thing is, like, if had I done Grey's, then I wouldn't have done Parks and Rec.
Sure.
And I love that show, and that's been really important in my life. So you just Peter Guber, the great, who you may have known, the great executive and business mind, and ran a movie studio, now has run World Series titles with the Lakers and an owner of Golden State Warriors. He's one of the smartest men I know. And he made a chart of all of the movies he passed on and all of the movies he made. And if he had reversed the decisions, he would have been in exactly the same place. And that's wow. sort of what I, where I, yeah. And I think about that a lot. And I think that at the end of the day, if you're around long enough, granted, if you only have two or three opportunities in your life, you better choose right. But if you're around a long, long time, the yeses and the noes are going to equal themselves out. And I really do believe that, but Cheryl Lowe does not.
Have you made choices though, based on your family and your kids being like, yeah, in another world, I would love to do that, but sorry, I have different priorities now.
Oh, for sure. Things that involve, like right now, look, I'm just, for example, if it shoots in Canada, I'm not doing it. I'm not going up there and quarantining for 2 weeks and then quarantining for 2 weeks coming out. I'm just not doing it. And, so there's, you know, it's all for me around travel and time away from the family. But here's the big but: my kids, we're empty nesters, Cheryl and I.
Yeah.
With COVID, we're not. But if all things being equal, you know, I do have more freedom to do the things that I would have turned down previous to being an empty nester.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that because, I mean, just in my situation, I've got three kids. I've got 13, 11, and 7, two boys, little girl. And my number one priority in my life is being a father before work, before anything, you know. And I do feel, though, that I have so much of my brain capacity, it is filled with my children, that once they do leave, I feel like my creativity will sort of open up and I'll have more room and just more time to explore things. I mean, did you feel that? Like once the kids actually left, as sad as it might have been, you've been opened up to do more.
Oh, and that is the great gift. And it's kind of exhilarating. I mean, not kind of exhilarating, it is exhilarating. So yeah. all kinds of things that I've always wanted to do, just down to stupid stuff like I quit golf when my kids were born. I couldn't see my way away from them on the weekend. I want to hang out with my boys at the beach or do whatever. And we'll be on a golf course. So I took golf up again. And by the way, Joe, we got to play at some point.
Yeah, I know. We whiffed in October.
I know. We got to do that. So I got back into golf. I started doing TM, Transcendental Meditation. I'd always heard about it, wanted to do it. Been doing that, which has been really just life changing.
Are you diligent on that? Because I have a friend who taught my wife and me, and I see it. I see the benefit. And my God, it's hard to get up, you know, now with these little boys too, get up a half hour early, get out of bed, go somewhere else, do it, or find time at night or sometimes twice a day. I mean, are you diligent with it now?
I'm diligent once a day, every day, for sure. Obviously, you're supposed to do it twice a day. And I'd say I might miss a day here and there, but it's easy for me because I have the big commute. And, you know, one of the beautiful things I've learned about TM is you can do it anywhere. Mm. I mean, I do it, you know, I get driven into work and I just am in the back of the car. And I just
from
get
Santa
it,
Barbara,
I knock
you
it
go
out.
Down, you go to work. That's how you go.
When I did the West Wing, I commuted every single day. Eventually, and drove myself. Eventually, I got a place, but I don't like being there. I will come back and forth, no problem. The only time I won't do it is if I'm last up and then first up the next day. Mm-hmm. I won't do that. That's crazy. But I'm in the car so much travel, and then on the set, if I'm working, you got 20-minute blocks all the time waiting for them to do the lighting setups. So for me, the TM really actually kind of works out.
Let me ask you a question about that because I've been meditating forever and it goes on and off, but it's not TM. And I'm a massive Stern fan and I know that he does it and he's the one who sort of back in the day even enlightened me to it. But do you have to have somebody to give you a mantra or how do you start TM? Can you just read
a
book?
Yeah, you do. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can, but everybody that I respect on it, I had ended up on a ski trip with Jerry Seinfeld of all people, who I love and admire, but didn't really know very well. And we started talking about it. And he's been doing it forever. And what he said to me was, "I have never been professionally exhausted ever in my career because of TM." Mm. And I was like, "Whoa." I'm professionally exhausted every day.
And think about his schedule with when he's on the road and doing multiple shows a night.
Yep.
And you can't say anything better.
No.
About transcendental meditation than that.
And so our mutual boss, Charlie Collier at Fox, as a gift for my birthday, got me a TM instruction. Mm. And I think you do have to there's the David Lynch Fund. There's a bunch of different places to do it. It's they teach 10-year-olds to do it. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest thing imaginable.
Do you get there, quote unquote? Do you get, you know, where you drop in and you do kind of leave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And sometimes you don't. And the whole point of it is you don't judge it. That's the thing is if it's hard, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right. If stuff starts getting in or your mind starts to wander, that's okay. Correct. I mean,
not only is it okay, it's a good sign because when you drop out into the level of transcendental, not thinking, whatever you want to call it, and you then come out of it and you've got thoughts. It's not bad. You didn't screw up. It's that you're transitioning. Something got fixed. You got what you needed, and now you're back to consciousness. And it's always going to be in a wave, an up and down wave. That's the nature of the beast.
Ollie, I've got the guy for you. I'm going to send him over. I'm going to give you that for your birthday because it does come with a bit of a price tag, and I'm glad that Charlie got that for you. As we're winding down, and we've got like 5 minutes left, I've talked on this podcast about the fact that I've had 8 hair transplant surgeries. I'm headed for my 9th. I got lipo last year. Yesterday, I got a lipo touch-up in my low belly. I am staring at like a 57-year-old fucking embryo on the other side of this Zoom call. How in the hell do you maintain your glow? Now, I'm not a drug guy, but I'll drink my face off when we and so that's one thing that's got to go. But I'm looking at like, you know, the son of a lamb coming down from heaven. So how do you keep this friggin' glow? You look like you're ready to go back on set for The Outsiders, for God's sake.
Oh, you're too nice. First of all, I want to do a deep dive about hair transplants. I literally watch the Bosley ads like entertainment. I'm obsessed with them. And there was a moment in time, I'll never forget it, when I was doing a big photo shoot first season of West Wing. So 2001. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. What is happening up here? What? This will not stand. And I hit that fucking Propecia so hard, bro. Like, yeah. I am on a Propecia drip.
Yeah. I was the only kid in high school. It's like, oh, hold on a second. Let me take my Propecia before calculus.
Yeah. Listen, this, we can't have this go.
No.
I mean, no one wants to see that.
I would kill for that. I would literally, I feel like I'm a nice person. I would kill somebody for your hairline. I would kill them. They wouldn't find them.
There's Hudson over there, you know, can see. I mean, look at that. He's got the
Yeah, but it's kind of
good. You should have been in Grey's Anatomy with that hair.
Yeah,
McDreamy. Where was your agent when you needed him? Look at that. Look at that Patrick Dempsey mop you got going.
It is a mop. But, you know, I saw Buck the other day for Family Feud, and now he's pointing out a recession.
Look at the forehead,
in my hairline.
Though. It's Dude, strong. It's a nice hairline, but it starts like around the second row.
I'm not doing it. I'm not going to your fucking guy. It's not happening. There's no chance. You know,
I'm not telling you to do
right
anything.
Before I get my hairline right.
Look, answer the question, Rob. I've yes. seen you with the friggin' diet, like the Mediterranean diet or whatever that thing is. That you're
no, it's the Atkins diet. By the way, it's been around forever. It's not even a diet. It truly isn't a diet because when you think of a diet just means you're going to stop at some point. It's a limited thing. I eat the Atkins way. It's low carbs, low sugar. But I also am in it for the long haul. Like, listen, last night, listen, when the sun goes down, all bets are off for me, mm-hmm. sadly. Okay. Like during the day, I can be all over it. The sun goes down and it's like, Haagen-Dazs, you must eat it.
Good. Okay.
I'll tell you what, I've been doing. Jimmy Kimmel. You remember Jimmy was like doughy and tubby for a long time.
Yeah.
And then he all of a sudden,
yeah.
And I was like, svelte. So he does the intermittent fasting. And, yeah. I got into that. So I've been doing that. But mostly it's eating, you know, eating well, drink a lot of water. I work out like a fiend. And then I've got, you know, my dad looks greasy, 81 years old. A lot of it is really genetics.
Do you think addiction transfers? Meaning if it was drugs or alcohol, then it can become religion. It can become fitness. You know, I think that's part of sort of how it works. I mean, I have an addictive personality. I need a vice of some kind. I can't go without a vice, you know?
Yeah, the hardest part about working is the hours on Lone Star, and thank God it's a physical part, is I am not in my right mind if I don't consistently work out really hard. Mm. And it just is brutal for me. I have to, left to my own devices, I do something every day, maybe multiple. It's all, you might say, it's not manic. I'm not going to say it's that, because it isn't. I mean, I'm doing TM. How can I be manic? But but it most people can't keep up with it.
You're a big enough star there. Wow. They will drag all that shit to wherever you're shooting, and you can have it there too, right?
Yeah, it's hard for me though to work out for 20 minutes and just COVID shut the gym down on the we can't do it with COVID. I used to do that, like every lunch break I would work out. That's what I used to do. You're right.
They are you drag cardio? It cardio or weights, like where do you need your intensity? Is it through weightlifting or just hardcore cardio stuff?
So that's changed a little bit as I've gotten older, and as the science has evolved and the thinking changes, and you know, mm-hmm. every 10 years is a new way to think. And I have to watch about staying in the junk zone. Mm-hmm. And the junk zone for me feels like where I want to be, where it feels like I'm fucking grinding. I'm like, fuck, okay. But it's not... Yeah. I'm in that zone too long. So it's, I'm not, I need to be either lower or higher, but not in that zone. So I used to think people who are walking were pussies. Turns right. out walking is awesome. And that is the best way to burn fat. And so I need to be doing something that seems to me like I'm not working out at all. Seems like a waste of time.
Wow.
It's not. And then do pick my spots where I beat the shit out of myself.
Yeah. God, I need to be more like
you. I'm going to go walk. We all do. Look, and by the way, you huffing, you doing that heavy breathing, that reminded me of Tea with Miss McGill, which I think helped me through my my high school lonely years. So thank you for that, Rob. Really appreciate that.
I always know a hockey fan when they talk about Tea with Miss McGill from Youngblood.
God. Just that, something about that.
By the way, when I shot that scene, that actress, I felt like she was 80.
Yeah.
And I look back on it and realize she was maybe in her late 30s.
Right. No, I know. Perspective shifts. Yeah. Maybe that's why I've always had a thing for kind of older women. I think I might have to blame you and Miss McGill for that.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with that. It's smart picking.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to go, and man, this we could talk to you all day, obviously. But I'm such a fan, and I'm such a fan of what you do on screen. But I'm a bigger fan of what's behind you, right there, which is you and your boys, and
oh, thanks.
The way you carry yourself. I'm glad you're at Fox. I'm glad we actually have I used to joke that, you know, we would get tickets for the World Series at Fox, but all of our stars were animated. And, you know, it's just nice to have a living, breathing human actually on camera instead of, hey, there's Marge Simpson down behind home plate. Now we've actually got Rob Lowe and 911 Lone Star. So good. I love it. Thank you. Thanks for doing
this. Yeah, this was great, man. This is great. I love talking to you. I feel connected to you in the way that you're raising your boys and raised your boys in the way that I do it with my kids. You know, I just, not to get into a whole other conversation, but I feel like we're entering this coddle zone with our children these days, and it's not a healthy place to be. We need to get more to understanding that they need discipline, they need structure, you know, and it's nice to hear that that's the way you think and that's the way that you did it.
It worked out for me for sure. And it's great to talk to you, both you guys. And Buck, you know, I love you. And Oliver, man, I please give my love to everybody in the family.
And, I will, man, for sure.
You know, and to tell Kurt that a week doesn't go by that we don't watch Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, God, that's so good.
I mean,
so good,
dude.
Yeah, it's gnarly.
Yeah, for your listeners out there, if you can handle it, Mr. Kurt Russell and Bone Tomahawk.
It's a bit gruesome, but God, it's good.
Real quick, but before we get out of here, though, how are you digging your podcast? I mean, we're doing doing it.
Since you brought it up, I want to know. I love you with the hand mic. What is the hand mic? It's very Vegas. I notice you do it. I've noticed you've done it. You do it with your podcast with your sister. Am I missing out? Do I need to go to the hand mic?
I like it. It's freeing. I can do this, and you know,
he has literally gone to take a piss, and while we're interviewing somebody, and he can drag all that into the bathroom. He needs to be mobile. That's his issue.
I would say I love doing my podcast. I thought I might like it. Turns out I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I absolutely love it. And more than anything, it's kind of like I wrote two memoirs, and I feel like the podcast is taking it to the extra step where I think without getting too highfalutin about it, I think at the core of people who want to do what we do is we're storytellers, we're communicators, and we want to be seen. Not literally seen, but understood. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you cannot get through a podcast without revealing who you are. That's what's great about it. It's not like being on Ellen or not like being on Oprah or CBS Morning News. Anybody can fake their way, and they do, through those appearances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're a podcast host or a podcast guest, you will be found out. Mm-hmm. And that is what I love about podcasting.
Very well said. Love that.
It's called literally
with Rob Lowe. And literally is a word that people in my family, my daughter Natalie and my wife Michelle, really overuse.
All do. I blame myself. I blame me.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. This was really fun. Really, really
fun. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
I'll see you on the dance floor someday. And if you decide
to play golf, invite me if you want to get smoked, because I'll take both of you.
Ollie's playing good right now. So, we'll make this happen.
This is a good foursome with Collier right here.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's do it. And we'll get Ollie a show on Fox by the turn.
Yeah.
I'm there.
I'm in.
We're on it.
All right. All right, good. All right, see you, Rob.
All right, boys. Adios. Thank you.
Adios. Later, man. Rob's a good dude, man. Very glowing. Cool guy. Love
He's awesome.
Him. Yeah.
That guy, he has seen it and done it all, and he has come out of the other end of that, and he is so well put together. It's remarkable that somebody that got in, you know, 83, I think, is when, Outsiders was 1983.
I've met him here and there, but I've admired the way from afar, the way that he has raised his boys and his relationship with his kids, you know?
I mean,
see it in little pieces that he does, or, you know, NFL stuff or interviews, and you can just feel the bond there, you know? And I just, I dig him. I think he's a good dude. Really, really, really nice man.
And I really hadn't put it together in my mind, but it's true. I mean, if you think, you know, I was born in 69. So when The Outsiders came out, I was 14. Class was another coming of age movie. I was 14. Oxford Blues, another one. I was 15. Salem Was Fire, I was 16. About Last Night, I was 17. So those were like the wheelhouse years of me putting all that stuff together, and watching these movies was a part of it.
I know. Erin, my wife, was just, you know, when we were on, she was like, you know, she was right behind me, not on screen, but she's like, is that Rob Lowe? It's Rob Lowe. I'm like, yes. It's, I mean, you know, she was in love with him. Posters on her wall when she was a kid, and the whole thing. So she was all giddy. I'm like, well, do you want to come in, say hi or whatever? I think she wanted to, but, you know, she was all nutty back here.
Uh-huh. Well, he's just a nice person. So
yeah,
good for him, and good for us. We got another big guest. I don't know how that happened, but we got him.
Yeah. It's all you, Joe. You're a beloved sportscaster.
I had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that. No.
All right. Well, should we end it?
Yeah. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margo Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.